the things that you're consuming every day, start with valuable resources. In terms of food, you know, food waste, you're wasting water. It's the consumer, the person out in Phoenix right now driving their car or whatever they've eaten today, you know, that water has basically been used twice. Water for food production and water for drinking are not mutually exclusive.
That's a great point from Stephanie Smallhouse that was made on this broadcast back in 2018. She's the current president of the Arizona Farm Bureau. I love that. Water for food and water for drinking aren't mutually exclusive. And I want to address one statement you had said, Chelsea, is lost water. And I try and not use lost water because you really don't lose water. You change its form. You don't ever lose water. You may mismanage it. You may not utilize it for what its intended purpose was, but evaporated water, it's not in its collection form. It's in its gas form. Well, it's going to come back.
Right.
It's going to condense in the clouds. It's going to rain, snow, fall on the mountaintops.
It's the weather cycle.
And come back down. Water's a closed loop cycle. The same amount of water is here all the time. It's just in different forms.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And I think what our farmers would tell you too is that when they talk about water waste, their fear is taking water that they have, the scarce water they have available to grow food, and not actually putting it toward that purpose, right? So when they look at water evaporation, they're saying, yeah, it's going to come back to me eventually. What I want, though, is for that water to go directly to the crop that I'm growing today. And so that's why this irrigation technology has come into play so heavily, because that's really going to decrease that water that's not going precisely where they want it to go and doing exactly what they want it to do.
So there is some other water technologies. We kind of drilled down, pun intended, on drip. But what about sprinklers? What about some of the other technologies? Even siphon tube irrigation has had improvements over the years.
Yeah, so I'll drill down a little on sprinklers, to use your terminology, Julie.
And does that include pivots?
Exactly, yeah. Pivots, so yeah. When we talk about sprinklers, I'm talking about center pivots that you might see that create those nice circular fields, right, that we see from our airplanes and that kind of thing. But it can also be what they call a solid set sprinkler. And so that's something that's going to move on a parallel track through that field and, you know, kind of move back and forth.
Mm-hmm. You want to see that, just drive on the 303 on the west side.
Yep,
exactly.
There's a lot more warehouses there than there was yesterday and 2 years ago and 5 years ago. But you still, that's primarily, and I feel for those guys. I mean, those look like heavy galvanized pipes, and they're picking them up and putting them down 2-3 times a year.
That's like, right.
And I wouldn't want to arm wrestle them.
Me either. And the reason you see so many of those around the 303 is because there's a significant amount of vegetable and produce production there. Melons, leafy greens, that kind of thing. And sprinklers work really well for those crops. One, because those crops take a lot of water to germinate from the outset. So when you have maybe drip installed, that water is going kind of below the seed, and that's not exactly where you want it to go. A sprinkler is going to put it right on top of the seed and allow that seed to germinate. And so that sprinkler allows you to put a lot of water at that point, get that seed germinated, and then the same thing as drip. You're controlling that from a pump system, and so throughout the growing cycle, you're only putting as much water on that crop as you want to put on it when you want to put on it.
Now, you said you had some stats on the sprinkler heads. Did you gather any of those? Did Joel John help us put that together? Or?
So one of the things I'm tempted to do but really don't want to do is say something like, you know, sprinklers are X percent more efficient than flood, or drip is X percent more efficient than flood. And a lot of the reason I don't want to do that is because of all the other variables that you have to play into that to make sure that, you know, you're not using the drip inefficiently when flood would be the better option or sprinkler would be the better option.
Based on the region, the soil type, what you are growing, all of those things have to be factored in. I'm telling you, these farmers have to be engineers.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But what we can say is the actual technology itself and ways to make it the most efficient. And so one of the issues you do run into sprinklers with is evaporation, because you're creating a much smaller water particle. It's going to evaporate a lot more quickly. And so what our farmers have done is find ways to get that water particle closer to the plant.
Okay.
And so especially like on a center pivot, when the actual sprinkler head is hanging down from the pivot, getting it as close to the ground as possible and then also making it as low pressure as possible is going to prevent that evaporation. It's going to get the water where it's supposed to go and make that technology even more efficient.
And then I assume they adjust that as the plant grows.
Exactly.
So interesting. So another one of the technologies, and Chelsea, you and I both can speak to this, is seed technology.
Yeah.
And this began decades ago. I want to say that it really truly began in the Norman Borlaug era, when he literally went to Mexico, was down there for years, and helped that country develop a wheat that was more drought resistant. Well, if you develop a seed, and it was all done in a very traditional way, mm-hmm. your typical crossbreeding of the best of the best.
High school biology, Punnett square type stuff.
Exactly. And the fact of the matter is, if I can produce a seed that takes less water, I'm using less water. So seed technology in our irrigation, our water management has been some of the most revolutionary. And all the way to, and a little bit more controversial, the biotech seed. And that is what, you know, the community at large might better understand as GMOs. So talk a little bit more about the biotech seed, the regulatory environment, and so that, and all of that done so that you and I are more safe.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm glad you brought up the Norman Borlaug era before that, because I really do like to talk about biotechnology as just speeding up that process. So when Norman Borlaug saw that, you know, this wheat's growing a lot shorter, which means you're not putting as much energy into the stock that you don't use, so that's the seed I'm going to breed. What our biotech engineers do now is they see that and they use it to say, okay, we're going to isolate that gene and then put it in something else. And that process is extremely rigid, extremely regulated, and extremely safe.
And one of the ways that we have been able to sustain the same water use here in Arizona over the last 64 years, talking water conservation over the last 6,400, 150 years, and how we're going to extend it into the future.